Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boileau and Nazarita Goldhammer, co-hosts at Your Epis Radio, radio for the thinking person. Continuing our discussion on a critical phenomenology of humans and the earth, part 10.
So,
where do we go today? That's the question. You know, for many, 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 many years, millennia, in fact, even for millions of years, the way Earth was regulated was by itself. It wasn't regulated by human beings. And when I wrapped my head around this, I was very intrigued. In fact, I think it's really important. So I figured we could start there today. Something changed in humanity in the last 200 to 300 years, in which the way humans decided to proceed has had a profound influence on the regulation of the earth. So the earth does fine without humans. So then when you add humans into the equation, these days, the regulation of the earth is profoundly affected by human beings. I mean, just think about that, right? And you don't even have to go farther. Just think about that. So if you think about anything in your life where you have a lot of control, like your doctor has control over your medical life, your teachers, your bosses, your spouses, children, there are people who have control over your life in great measure. It seems to me that the ones in charge have a profound moral duty to think about what they're doing. And we've not really found our place in the world other than to dominate the world. I mean, dominating is not really finding a place. And that's just sort of an annihilation philosophy. And there's a bit of hubris, I think. So what I had to think about also was how this applies on a kind of a day-to-day basis that helps me understand. And a good way to talk about this issue is limit setting. Therapists talk about this all the time. Jobs, corporations, businesses, schools, everybody has a vital function to play in a system, but if one person, or if there are many persons who don't accept limits, then you have a system that's out of balance. And it's my belief that, and many other people, I'm not the only one, who believe that humans just refuse to set limits. It's a message that Nazarita gives on our show a lot in many other contexts. The whole idea that corporations should continue growth, that GDP ought to increase every year. And, you know, that might be a way of thinking 200 years ago. But even then, it's not viable because there are limits. The earth is limited. It's been predicted and determined by the scientists who would know this, that we will have run through 80% of our petroleum on this planet by the year 2050. So we didn't conserve it. We could have conserved petroleum and used it for thousands of years as a partial source of energy. But we didn't do that. We had to just mine it as much as we possibly could. And so the petroleum scientists have determined that we will have run through 80%. So what that should tell everybody is we need a new source of power really soon. It's because we didn't set limits. we don't set limits on how many fish we take out of the ocean. And so we have a fish scarcity now. We don't set limits on many of the things we do. One of the worst situations right now is cattle ranching. And nobody wants to set limits. We want to just continue to deforest, chop down rainforest, old growth forest, any kind of forest, and produce more cattle, kill them, and feed hamburgers and steaks to people. And we know it's a very inefficient way of producing food. Like, nobody disputes that. You'd have to be, like, really, really, really stupid to dispute that. It's just not efficient. So with the human population rising, we have to produce more and more cattle if that's the way we're going to feed people. So there's lots of examples. And if you think about, you know, just moral thinking, if you think about the idea of Dharma or the Tao in the Chinese world, if you think about just basic sensibility, conservation of resources, running a business, you can't run through all of your income. You can't just keep spending without very carefully and rationally deciding how you're going to grow your business or how you're going to run a family or how you're going to pay for a project. It requires some thinking. And if you have one species that attempts to dominate an ecosystem, it stands to good reason that your ecosystem is going to be distorted. It's going to be out of balance. And that's the situation we have right now. Human beings have, through their arrogance, largely, believe it or not, it was largely set into motion by Western religion. That's still at play, although, you know, that mindset now has been adopted by many other people who were not religious. I'll give you another example. The medical industry is completely out of balance. They want to dominate the human experience. They're arrogant. They have hubris. And I'm talking about Western medicine. And so we have an economic disaster going on right now in medicine. People can't pay for basic health care. So that's a problem. And we pay doctors way too much money. And I want to go on record for saying that. Yes, so what? You went to 4 years of medical school. You did a residency. You get paid too much money. We need to rein in these, you know, six-figure incomes of doctors. They should be making 60 to 80 grand a year, just like everybody else. But that's not what happens. So you have doctors buying into medical affiliations and medical corporations and turning their four-year medical degree into this license to annihilate and dominate the ecosystem through the economic system. That's the way this works. So we postulated this idea in our own terms, in our book on transhumanism. There are other words for it, but it's the idea that we need to really scrutinize the meaning of the human being. What is our place in the cosmos? What is our place on this earth? So because of this overwhelming desire to dominate, you see the rise of modern corporations, transnational corporations, shipping product all over the world, all over the earth. And so there's a huge literature that explains really well how alienates us from place. like there's a lack of intimacy with where each person lives. And this was caused by transnational corporations. But again, people don't want to be limited. They don't want to be limited to the growing season where they live, so they purchase transnational products. And you can't be intimate with the whole earth at one time. We're not capable of doing that. So what happens is that we're in a frenetic system that's completely dominated by capitalism and globalism. And so you have people visiting national parks and national forests, many people who have no idea about the land and no true intimacy with the beings on that land. But they're just little spectators. They have enough money to go to a national park. They take their little pictures. They buy their souvenir. And they perpetuate the system where we're not intimate with the land. And that's a big product of transnational corporations. So we have this way we use language that somehow makes people believe that we have the right to run the earth. We have the right to dominate the earth, to harness the earth, to make the biggest possible houses, to make the greatest amount of income. This is what? Putting humans in the middle, the centrism of the human, anthropocentrism, to be at the center. In psychology, we call that narcissism. Grandiosity is a looser term. And you see it. And to live without limit, we also produced several chapters in a book we just published on violence. Living without limit is an element of violence. Because I'm not going to agree to any system. I'm not going to agree to any natural system. I'm not going to agree to any moral system. I'm going to go out and I'm going to compete. I'm going to get everything I want. And somebody else can clean up my mess. So what we've done, and this is where I'm going to stop and then hand the microphone to Nazarita. We have these ecosystems all comprising our biosphere. Many ecosystems, various sizes. And they run themselves just fine until humans are involved. And humans distort these ecosystems. We put our own desire for money, our desire for fame, fortune, our view of perfectionism, our Christian view, that we get to build as big of a house as possible and buy big land. And so what we've done is we've elevated our own interests over the health of the planet, culture over ecology. So I'm going to stop right there. Nazarita, we're welcome to the show. We're happy to have you. What do you have to say about these thoughts?
Well, it's really profound that we think that we can dominate everything and abuse and consume. And part of that is that I really think that most people have a very narrow seeing ability for what goes on in the world. If it isn't in their immediate, you know, range of living, then it doesn't really exist. The only thing that changes that is usually when we expand our awareness or come have a run-in with a difference of opinion or something that goes against what we actually believe to be true or what we've heard on social media or what friends and relatives have told us, and we come up against the opposite or some revealing part of our ecosystem, the way that we live, that is contrary to the way that we've been living. I really like, I saw this on social media, of course, and this is from an indigenous elder of Cherokee descent, Stan Rushworth. And this is what he said. He reminded someone of the difference between a Western mindset of I have rights and an indigenous mindset of I have obligations. And he said, instead of thinking that I'm born with rights, I choose to think that I am born with obligations to serve past, present, and future generations and the planet herself. So there's something in that, is that when we take so much, what ends up happening is those, we think that those are our rights to what everybody would agree, clean water, clean air, a place to live, whatever you want to call them, those are what humans think of as their right. And yet we consume so much that we forget that with those so-called rights, if you could meld those two, there are obligations. Obligations to clean the air, to clean the water, to look at non-human others instead of murdering and torturing them, and drinking the products of their breasts and using their fur and their skin when there isn't any need to do so. So I think one of the most important parts, people often bring that up, you know. Well, they bring up, my family has done this for generations. It's shot and killed and eaten. But we don't need to do that. It's like we forget that if we are an evolving species, we can change our future. We can change the present. We don't have to live like we did in the past where you know, things might have been different. Like that would be saying that, well, we could live like we did before, but there, you know, we have to eliminate a lot of things that we appreciate in the world that we have actually have access to. You brought up food. I find this really interesting because, you know, California, Midwest, all the Western states and then Midwest in the United States, they're experiencing a tremendous lack of water. But that lack of water is really hurting crops that actually are meant for cattle. They're, some of them, the majority, are not meant for people. And yet we have people starving, but we're growing food for cattle for people who can afford to, you know, eat another, someone with eyes. And I find that an interesting juxtaposition with what we believe or what everybody says they believe morally, their moral responsibility to help the other, to be kind, to be generous, to be giving. And those that follow almost any major religion, the tenets of most major religions are to help the poor, to give, to be kind, to be loving, as you would want to be treated. It's in every major religion, and yet what we find is the exact opposite. And I find that really astounding that our mindset is like that. So I did a little research because, you know, there is a big oil spill in California, and there have been many off the coast of California because there's oil. And so I was looking at, like, because I was looking because on one hand, humans think to themselves, well, it's not in my backyard. And they think, well, it's just oil. Why don't they just stop it? But this is where that right versus obligation comes in, that we could just stop oil production. But because we have a right to it, we think, because if we really look at what petrochemicals are used in, you would be absolutely shocked and floored and astounded that most of our daily life products involve petrochemicals. They involve petroleum, we don't even think of it because we're so immersed in these products that are used to make plastics. They make hospital equipment, pharmaceuticals. They make deodorant, pantyhose, comb, shampoo, eyeglasses, toothpaste. And unless you're aware, they make cups and dishes, and they all use this product in their creation, unless you start to look and find products that are petrochemical free. And that means really digging. But first you have to be aware. Like plastics, Legos, right? Legos, you know, a lot of products that are, most products that are plastic use that. And yet we're consumed with plastic. So where's our obligation? Our oceans are filling with microplastics and plastics. They're hurting other life. They're hurting ourselves. We have huge landfills with nowhere to process plastic. I mean, we throw away plastics every day. And so that's our obligation to the earth, to ourselves, and to the non-human other, that we have to really look. It's not just our divine right to abuse and use. We have to look at what are our obligations. We're killing ourselves. We're actually purposefully, knowingly killing ourselves through our rampant, voracious consumerism. And it's easy to be a consumer. I mean, it's so easy to be a consumer. There are new products out every day, tantalizing through, you know, you get ads on Facebook, you get ads, Instagram accounts, visual candy. Want, want, want. And most people who see something, even a non-human other, like Bengal cats, I want one. That's what the list of people who respond to those pictures say. I want one. I want to have. And yet we haven't really thought about what having means. It's an obligation. If you have and you're taking care of, you know, an animal, you have obligations. And obligations are not a throwaway kind that when you're done or want to keep your pet in a corner or to shut up or not to eat or you want to go on vacation so you put them in some cage somewhere. Those are not fulfilling really obligations. You're not a good steward even of what we have. And yet we continually want more. How do we stop that? There's lots of ways to stop what in the East calls the monkey mind. The monkey mind is I gotta have, I want more. And then typical, they use this, which monkeys are so intelligent. I mean, they're us, right? But if they see something they want in a jar or, you know, a container, they put their hand in and they grab and make a fist. They can't get it back out. But they won't let it go because they want what's in there. That's what we are like. We're handicapping ourselves. We want something, but we don't know how to have the obligation to care for the repercussions of our desires. And that's in relationships. That's in relationships to other humans, to non-humans, to the earth, to the trees, to minerals that we mine. Like, what are we doing? Like, we have to one time ask ourselves that question. What are we doing? Killing ourselves. Those are just some of my thoughts, because what you were talking about is so very important. It was so well put, that we live in a state of unknowing. And, you know, when are we going to see?
Right. So a lot of this is determined by language structures, like language creates reality. And because we're dominated by corporations and the value of money, that the destruction of environment or the use of environment or the exploitation of environment is always viewed as a secondary consideration. Of course it is. It's viewed as an add-on. It's something that corporate leaders have to address at some point, but they address it in terms of money making. We're just seeing the very beginning of a moral consciousness. The problem is that corporations have a stronger moral and legal duty to their shareholders. So there's a lack of communitarianism. There's a lack of integration. And it's gotten now to where through we have the World Bank, we have the International Monetary Fund, we have the World Trade Organization. So all of these international groups are ways to continue to prop up corporate greed. Corporations at this point, I think, need to be seriously destroyed. Like Facebook, it's a monster. Google, it's a monster. Their sole objective is to make money. And so that's different than saying our sole objective is to become a participant on the world stage, integrate with the community, and do things that will be good for ecosystems and the ecology. We don't do that. Corporations don't do that. They give lip service to it, but they don't actually do it. So as you've pointed out, people who think about animal rights, people who think about ecology and conservation, they're always seen as weirdos, right? Tree huggers, hippies, radicals. When in reality, it's the people who are using up everything who are the weirdos. They're the people who live solely to make money and to pad their bank account, buy a big house, and provide for their family. These are people who are troglodytes. They're stupid people. They're uninformed, and I have to denigrate them because they are. I have to call it for what it is because they are hurting what we do. They're hurting the earth, and they don't want to admit it. They will point to their good life of going to church, and you know being good stewards of their families and houses and paying their taxes. But that's precisely what's wrong. It's an illusion. It's a trap. So until we have a more communitarian notion of an integrated ecology, then we're going to continue to take what's left. And there's not much left. So what's worse, you have people who don't understand theory. They don't want to understand critical theory. They don't want to be suspicious about the way their mind works. And what's happened now is that corporations actually have made us all believe that they are the panacea, or they are the savior, the rescuer, or they're the road to utopia. Either work for a corporation or participate in some way with internet media about a corporation and all that it offers. But there's no critical view. By most people. And so my point is, this is kind of a Marxist notion. Ooh, I used a bad word. I used a potty word. But it's a notion that says corporations have taken control of the noosphere. They've taken control over your mind. And they really want us to believe that they're going to lead us to a better world. But they're not. It like you mentioned, it's really important to source products, the supply chain. With regard to petrochemical, that's a great example. But anything that you buy, you have to source it. And so we're all sitting in the middle of this distorted, violent stew right now. And some of us are trying to clean it up, and some of us are trying to get out of it. But most of us aren't. Like Costco. Costco is one of the worst offenders in their supply chains, and yet people will continue to shop at Costco because it's cheaper. That's the whole point. It's cheaper, therefore I'm going to go buy there. Cheaper doesn't make it better. Cheaper often means, and usually means, and ought to mean, that there's been a distortion and a violence somewhere on the food chain. They're beating the market, in other words. Try telling that to somebody who shops at Costco. They just won't be able to believe you, unfortunately. So now we have all of the democratic interests in democratic countries where we have many different values, right? All sorts of values. And those values, that set of values, are suppressed by corporate values. That's what's happened. And corporate values are all about annihilation and increasing revenue, no limits, ultimate growth, fancy corporate cars. The whole idea of spending money to build a spaceship to leave planet Earth is insane. All that money should be used to clean up messes on the Earth. Let's clean our own house instead of thinking about escaping. That's what we do. We use up a forest, we frack, and then we leave. That's not sustainable. And so we have these little boys who got lucky and they make a lot of money and they can go do things like that. It's crazy. It's not common. So here we are. We have this extractive economy. How are we going to change that? Nazarita, how are we going to change the fact that we have an extractive economy? Because that's what we do have. It's extractive. How are we going to change that? We're taking from everywhere. How are we going to change that extractive economy? What are we going to do?
Well, what I think everyone has their own personal issues, but as we know, and what's been you know, said before, is that not only do we take responsibility for ourselves, because that's really the first step, I can tell you some of the things that I've started to do, which is I'm your typical consumer. I see beautiful things. I think they're wonderful. I want to have them. I want to look them. Because in really looking at that desire, it's wanting to have a beautiful world, to be surrounded by beautiful things that emanate this purity. But in reality, what ends up happening is they're throwaway things. After you've seen them for a while, you're ready to get rid of them. So part of it is to disengage through a lot of companies that we submit our emails to, that send us emails every day that say, look at our new product, look at this, you have to have this, this is what everybody's wearing right now, oh, look at these new shoes. And being a vegan, there's a lot of vegan companies that are now doing the same thing as other non-vegan businesses. They're wanting to sell more. And in our economy, this is a really natural thing. So that we've lived with and grown up with. And to change that is to change our behavior of purchasing, of consuming, to really find out each thing, where does it come from? How is it made? Am I going to actually use it? A lot of things aren't made to last anymore. A lot of clothing's not made to last. It's made to last if you wear it continuously. Sometimes it doesn't even last a month. And we know, we were speaking of this earlier, our phones, our computers, our appliances aren't meant to last anymore. They're not made well. What they are is they're made to be thrown out, thrown away somewhere in some landfill that sits for millions of years and never breaks down and is harmful to the environment and others, non-human others, who use that as their place where they live. So I think that, you know, we always turn back to education, and education is really hard in our day and age because we have such short attention span. We want little blips from our social media. you know, very fast, 5-second blips, you know, condense it, to do the hard work of really looking at where things come from. It takes time. It takes to have solidarity with others, that we can work together. We can have friends and people that we know that are in the same thing that can tell us about what they've done and how do we start this community? How do we join together? Because it only takes one person to begin a community of reaching out, finding like-minded people to change what's going on. I mentioned the oil spill, which, you know, is they're saying that it could close the beaches for months. And now there's an outcry, and this is what we've talked about before. People who live there are saying these things. We have said, and we want offshore oil drilling to stop. And yet it continues against public outcry. We're finding this with wolves, with the killing and murdering of wolves, and with all other species. The public is crying out that they don't want these things, and yet big business and officials that support it are saying, we're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it anyway because we're making money, and we don't care what you say, that you have a safe place to live, clean air, clean water. We don't actually care. What we care about is our own making money. And that's where you were right. So before you spend your money, they say they vote with your vote and buy
with your vote. So I can really get that
in the right way.
Yeah, vote in the right way.
How you vote determines who's in office and what they get to do. Right now we don't seem to have
great choices anymore.
Yeah, I agree. No, we don't. And who is that on? I mean, if we take responsibility for who we have in office, we can say that people that have money are on air, they use social media, they're always in your face. They have a name that you might have heard before. And you know, they use this in marketing. If you hear a name all the time, a certain toothpaste, you're more apt to buy it because you remember it. The memory says, oh, yeah, I want this. But that doesn't mean it's the best. So we have to learn to control ourselves and to investigate, to learn, to investigate, and to pass on our knowledge.
So the question I have is, can we reinvent who we are? Can we become somebody new? Can humans change? Can we move beyond these extractive, exploitative mindsets where we live violently, we live without limit, we have selfish need to accumulate money in bank accounts and retirement accounts and hoard our money and not spend it, not give any of that energy out, not be communitarian except for a little bit of charity checks written at the end of the year. Charity, it's ridiculous. That is such a feeble notion. Charity is ridiculous. We wouldn't need charity if we had a communitarian system. That's the whole point. It's part of nihilism, charity. So people make themselves feel good because they write a friggin' check to their church. So we need to reinvent the human being. That's critical phenomenology. We need to reinvent how we see the world, how we interpret it. You know, and part of what we need to get out of is this overwhelming, annihilating feature of capitalism and having and fear. Everybody wants their fair share. Right, my this, my that, my this, my that, and we need to educate children and adults about what an ecosystem is, how it works, how it's limited, how it's finite, what our role should be in it. Just think about the fulfilling life that our children and grandchildren could have if we're all working towards a better biosphere. One of the things I'm absolutely sick of hearing is people who continue to take, and they're selfish, and they say, they'll applaud me, they'll say, "Wow, you are such a good person. We're so glad to have people like you." As if it's my job to pick up after them. Like I'm really picking up after them. You're picking up after them, Nazarita. It is not just for me. It's for everybody. This is a job for everybody. Everybody needs to be participating towards a different kind of human. And part of that means a different set of myths. We need to pull ourselves out of some of the old myths, the old mythological structures, and we need to develop some new ones. Or we need to liberate some of those myth structures that have been suppressed. So it's absolutely, it's a critical point where we're at. I think we really are at a crisis point. I think we're at a super critical intersection where we have to create new language, new myth, new values, and every single person has to participate. I'm so tired of the begrudgingness of people who have a few bucks in the bank. And they'll even say things like, "Well, I'm not going to spend my personal money on that, my personal money." But that's what we have to do. We have to give of ourselves 24/7. We've ruined things. And somebody said before me, you can't change what you don't acknowledge. You can't change what you don't acknowledge. And I've learned that about my own life. If I don't acknowledge the truth about who I am, the good and the bad and the ugly, I don't have a shot at changing anything. I've had to change lots of things in my life. And I think that most people have a lot of things they need to change. Here's one right now, Nazarita, that I'll mention, and we're just about out of time. So I'm going to take us to a close. But we have to stop this ideology of procreating. We have to stop. We have too many people on the earth. And there are some religions, I'm not going to mention them, who have this arrogance that they ought to keep procreating, having these big families. That's false. That is a destructive attitude. We can't afford it anymore. It's like, stop spreading your legs. Stop copulating. If you're a guy and your job is to produce 4 or 5 or 6 children, stop it. The earth cannot handle your arrogance. We need to stop. And that's a matter of being circumspect with everything we do. The middle way philosophy. The middle way. And this is why indigenous wisdom is so important. This is why shamanism is so important. This is why aboriginal wisdom is so important. It's critical. And the wisdom of women. I can say it. Men have mucked up, especially white European men have mucked up our world because of greed and the belief that we ought to dominate. Now, we're going to come back next week. Going to continue on and hope you have a good week. And we're going to continue pursuing all sorts of strange and interesting topics. We hope to have you back next week. This is Epis Radio signing out.